I'm part of the first wave of so-called digital natives, millennials. We mostly grew up in the real world, but were the first to live big chunks of our lives online too. I don't know what you did, but for me, chat rooms and email changed the way my friends and I hung out. And looking back, there have definitely been times where I wish that I could ask Facebook or MySpace to just wipe everything, please delete those accounts, erase my data. But the truth is, for my generation and possibly yours, it's too late. That data has been copied and shared and sold. The digital horse has bolted. But for kids growing up now, things could be different. Children now have a massive digital footprint by the time they graduate daycare. It only explodes when they get to school. And a new children's online privacy code is aiming to change that, giving young people the ability to delete data that was captured before they turned 18. So if kids are about to have much more control over their digital world, could us adults get in on this too? Tell me, how much of your kids' data have you had to hand over just to use the School Tuck Shop app or sign up for childcare? And how do you feel in retrospect about the stuff you've chosen to share, like cute photos that you might have put online when they were babies? You can send me a text. Tell me about how you feel about how much of your kids' data lives online. 0418 226 576. With me is Carly Kind, the Privacy Commissioner. She's led the development of the Children's Online Privacy Code, which is currently in draft form, and Lizzie O'Shea, Chair of Digital Rights Watch. Carly, Lizzie, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We'll get into the details of the code in a sec, but just to get the lay of the land, Carly, what do we know about the size of a children's digital footprint up till now?
Well, some research shows that there are around 72 million data points on children available on them out there in the digital ecosystem by the time they turn 13, which is a pretty astronomical number. And I should say that stat came out a few years ago, so it's reasonable to think that there is now even more, given the, as you described, Tegan, the kind of digitization of our children's life, which only increases year on year. And I think that probably resonates with many of us who have either been a child or have children ourselves, that the amount of digital tools that are asking for our children's data, whether that be interfacing with schools, daycares, or indeed the apps and games that our kids use themselves, has really exploded. And I think it's fair to assume that there is an astronomical amount of data about them out there in the digital world.
So, Lizzie, under the current system, how hard would it be to remove those 72 million pieces of data if we wanted to?
Well, it's not really meaningfully available to parents to seek to have that data deleted. There are some restrictions on how long companies can hold personal information or government entities about young people. It's really then for parents to be the people who have responsibility for dealing with that, and that purpose has to no longer be in operation. And that, I think, is just too low a bar. You can't proactively ask, for example, to have information deleted or be removed from a certain kind of data base. So there's not really a process presently to deal with deletion. And that's different to lots of other parts of the world where this is a pretty normal thing.
So Carly, let's talk about the code that is in draft form. It's pretty big. We're going to have to give an abridged version this morning. What are sort of the main thrusts for you?
Well, I think I'll start by saying, firstly, that the code has been legislated by Parliament, in the sense that Parliament gave the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner the mandate to develop the code. And then my office has developed the code in consultation with children, carers, parents and young people over the last year or so. And now what is available for your listeners to access is the draft code. It's called the exposure draft. And we're, for the next 2 months, we're seeking input and consultation on that draft code. And then we will work on a final version, and that will become law by the end of this year. In terms of the main features of the code, I'll start by saying that it covers all services that are likely to be accessed by children. So that'll include any online service or tool that is directed at children, so children's games, for example, or streaming services, as well as any online tool or service that has a significant amount of children on that platform and that the platform knows about it. So that would include social media, but it may include a wide range of other applications as well. And we have also extended the application of the code to services that primarily handle children's data. So there we're thinking about places where children themselves aren't using the tools, like a tuck shop app, for example, or a daycare app. It's not that my two-year-old is going on to log himself into his daycare, but rather I'm putting all of his data there and his carers are putting the data there. So those apps and services will also be covered. So it does have a pretty wide application. In terms of the main requirements or protections contained in the code, I'll give you the top five or six. So first of all, the code requires that the starting point is data minimization. So apps, games, services have to collect the minimum amount of data necessary to provide the service in the first place, not all of that additional data that they'd like to have to service their other objectives around advertising, for example. So data minimization is the starting point. The best interest of the child has to become the primary consideration. So when organizations are deciding how to collect or use or even disclose to third parties children's personal information, they have to consider, what are the best interests of the child here? Does this expose the child to exploitation risks, like commercial or sexual exploitation? That may there be some other ill effects on their health or well-being? The code requires that consent becomes a real tangible thing. So you can't just have a bunch of tick boxes. You can't guilt trip children into choosing less privacy preserving options. And where parents are required to give consent, and the code says that children under the age of 15 won't be able to consent themselves to the provision of certain kinds of information, children are invited to assent to that consent, so that they're brought into the process of consent, so that they start to understand what it means to consent to the handling of their personal information in the digital domain, and that they know when their parents are consenting on their behalf. And of course, finally, there is the right to erasure, which you've already talked about, this ability to request the deletion of your data. And we believe that's a really fundamental way of shifting power to children and their parents, as well as highly aligned with what we know the Australian community want out of privacy protections.
So Lizzie, from the Digital Rights Watch perspective, this sort of external body, what are your views on the draft code?
Well, I think this is a really exciting development. I think the broad brushstrokes that Carly just gave are really encouraging. This is kind of what we had hoped for in terms of what this code would look like. So this does also, when it gets implemented, will bring us in line with lots of other places where there are significantly improved protections for children. So even though it is a big change, it's actually, in relative terms, just getting our privacy laws up to date for this specifically vulnerable group. So it's a big improvement. Currently in the Privacy Act, which hasn't had some meaningful updates to key provisions in, decades, you're really reliant on things like bare consent. So you can give consent once and then that information could be held or used for a variety of different purposes over time, including for reasons that you might not have anticipated. And so this kind of reframing that consent has to be voluntary and specific and can be withdrawn is really important. And I think it sets kids up for also an adult life that has a more clear understanding of privacy and the implications. So we're really pleased with the key elements of it. And I think the process of consultation and engagement, particularly with young people, I think has been particularly positive. That is something that is too easily not done in this context, making policy about young people without necessarily including their perspective. So that effort that's been made to do it is really encouraging. There are some things that we're concerned about and we want to talk more about, and this process of consultation as the code moves through this phase of public exposure, it will be really important to give some of that feedback to the OAIC for the purposes of drafting. But we think a lot of these elements are really strong and we're looking forward to seeing them implemented for young people.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Lizzie O'Shea, who's the chair of Digital Rights Watch, and Carly Kind, the Privacy Commissioner within the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, about a draft code aiming to protect kids' data online. We heard Carly and Lizzie described before, that by the time a child reaches 13, there's an estimated 72 million pieces of data about them that have been collected by companies over the years. We're just swimming in it. And I'm interested to know how much of your kids' data you've had to hand over just to be able to navigate being a parent. And I'm also interested to know what your kids have had to say about the stuff you've shared about them online over the years. Are they okay with their cute baby photos living on in perpetuity online? Kelly says, my kids are in their early 20s. I always resisted anything that would result in their full names or images going online when they were minors. I would not give permission when the school sent home media release forms and so on. Sometimes they felt like the weirdest or that they were missing out somehow. Now, however, they're both grateful. I just didn't feel comfortable or entitled to put that stuff out there when they were too young to make their own choices about something that would be outside their control forever. Lizzie, I kind of feel like we've all had to learn on the job a little bit with the internet, that we've had platforms like social media platforms have been around for nearly 20 years now, which means there are adults out there whose baby photos are shared online. And I didn't think about it when I was doing that sort of thing a decade or so ago. It wasn't a consideration for me then.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. So one of the aspects of this code is it talks about consent and the dynamic between parents and children in enabling that consent. So children aren't legal people in the sense that they can't technically enter into contracts, they can't agree to things, they have their parents who do that for them. But too often now, I think there's an assumption that parents will make those decisions unilaterally for children, and it will always be in their best interests in circumstances where parents don't always have the capacity to make those choices. So one of the benefits, I think, of this code is to also require and encourage parents to think quite carefully about their protective role in children's lives when it comes to data, and think about prioritising things like data minimisation and not oversharing of children's information, even when parents might enjoy doing that, right? And, you know, I think all parents understand that kind of dynamic, but also understanding that as children get older and particularly move into their late teen years, they might have their own views about what they want to consent to and what they don't, and that should be a dialogue and discussion between parents and children. I think this code does a good job of setting that up, there's a dynamic of autonomy that grows as children get older, and parents should be having these kinds of conversations with children, and parents should be educating themselves about how data is collected and used about their kids as they move through their years.
So Carly, this idea of giving kids the right to delete their digital data once they turn 18, how would that actually work?
Well, the first thing I'd say is it doesn't just kick in once they turn 18. The ability to request deletion of data will apply to all children, and it will also apply to their parents to request deletion of data on their behalf. Now, as Lizzie said, this is a novel protection here in Australia, but it has been part of law in Europe for almost a decade now, the right to request the deletion of your data. Eminently technically achievable and feasible, as has been demonstrated in Europe. Essentially, the code sets up a right to request the deletion of your data and an obligation on the entity to do so, and to do so within 30 days, and to let you know if it's going to take them longer than that to do that. And that will enable children to, for example, or their parents on their behalf to write to a platform, a tool that they used previously. So, for example, like I've done, move my kids from one daycare centre to another. I can now go back to the previous daycare centre's app provider and say, I want you to delete all of the images and data that you have on my child from the time that we were using that app, and that they have to to honour that request within 30 days. So it's a very powerful protection. And I think it will require some work on the part of entities to make the kind of technical and logistical arrangements to give effect to deletion in that way. But I would say that this code will apply to organisations that are already covered by the Privacy Act. And the Privacy Act already requires these organisations to know what data they hold and to have a process in place for deleting it when they no longer use it. So they should already have the infrastructure there to delete data, and they should be regularly deleting data. What this will do is it will shift the power into the hands of the individual to request that deletion, rather than waiting for the organisation itself to do it as part of normal process.
So when you say something that's already covered by the Privacy Act, how does that interplay with companies that are based overseas?
The Privacy Act has essentially extraterritorial effect in the sense that it covers all entities who have a turnover of more than $3 million a year. So it doesn't cover small businesses. But in terms of any organization that has that higher turnover, it covers them if they're carrying on business in Australia. And that includes any that includes companies that are domiciled overseas, their headquarters overseas, if we can establish that they're carrying on business in Australia. And that's a kind of qualitative assessment that has reference to, you know, whether they have staff here, whether they market here, whether they have, you know, Australian specific subsites, et cetera. But if they are carrying on business here in Australia, it will apply to them as well. And that's why we've been able to, you know, leverage our enforcement powers against companies like Meta, for example, historically, which is an American company, of course, but is clearly carrying on business in Australia and is therefore captured by the Privacy Act.
Lizzie, we obviously want to protect kids. They're vulnerable by nature of their age, but have you thought about whether it would be a good thing to extend this up to adults as well?
I think one of the phenomena that people might experience when they read the draft code, which I encourage people to do because it's very accessible, it's drafted in ways that I think people will be surprised at how easy it is to understand, and that's, I think, a really good initiative. So when you read it, a lot of the things struck me as very, very sensible stuff that most adults would also expect to be available to them. And so some of the things we've talked about would make a lot of sense for adults as well. Being able to delete information, an approach of data minimization, not waiting for companies to delete information. I mean, if you were a customer of someone like Optus or maybe Medibank, but particularly Optus, who held a lot of information about customers that were no longer customers but had been in the past, I think a lot of people feel quite frustrated about the way in which companies can be holding information about them for a very, very long time that they argue might not be necessary, but companies have found a way to retain it, right? So returning some of that power to individuals to exercise their rights, I think, is really important in the world in which we live now, where so much information is moving about you, is moving around online and being collected and retained. So I think shifting that power balance is something that many adults would see as an important step forward for them to be able to enjoy. And so I think this code will, when it comes into force, raise a lot of questions about how we might be able to reform the remainder of the Privacy Act as it applies to adults. And this is a process that the government is currently undertaking. There's been a long set of consultations around reviewing the Privacy Act and bringing it up to date, and a range of organisations, individuals, companies have put input into that process. And a lot of the things that are in the Children's Online Privacy Code are also things the government accepts need to change in the Privacy Act for adults as well. But there's a question about when that occurs. And the government has said that it's planning to introduce its next tranche of reforms to the Privacy Act. The first tranche is what gave rise to this process of drafting the Children's Online Privacy Code and a few other things. But I think that second tranche will be really important in terms of what's included, what might be left out, what adults think is important for them to be protected as well. I think adults often feel quite vulnerable and disempowered in this information economy and would like to see that dynamic shifted. And I think there's good grounds to think that the government should act on that mandate. Most of the polling suggests that privacy reform to give people stronger protections is immensely popular. So lots of people understand this to be very important to their well-being, to their experience of online life. And I think there's a strong mandate there for the government to act.
It's Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Lizzie O'Shea from Digital Rights Watch and the Privacy Commissioner, Carly Kind, about draft legislation aiming to protect kids' data better online. And I'm asking you how you feel about how much data gets handed over for your kids just as part of being a parent. Alana says, I've never posted any photos online of my children aged 0, 1, and 3 because you can never control where that data will go. I also don't think it's fair to be posting photos on their behalf when they're too young to have a voice. Another person says, I find it completely irresponsible when parents share anything, photos included, about their children online. Kids aren't asked. Anyone can abuse the content, and there's absolutely no reason for doing it in the first place. I wonder if, Lizzie, we need a bit of a cultural change here as to what we think is a normal amount of sharing and what is a reasonable amount of data to be requesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too hard on parents. I think a lot of parents have grown up in a culture where they shared a lot, maybe in the early days of social media, and they share a lot about with their children now. And I mean, I don't do it either, but I do understand the very strong incentive to post. You know, these platforms are designed to encourage people to do that. So I understand that. You know, I also agree with many of the callers that we need to respect children's rights in this context and think about their long-term future. And so that is a culture shift. But I think also a lot of parents have grown up in a different kind of culture now to what their children will be raised in. And I think it is time to have a pretty important conversation about what you share and don't share on behalf of children. And what is in the best interests of children? That is the overarching kind of framework of a lot of children's privacy protections, but internationally children's protections, right? So let's think about what that looks like and develop a culture around thinking carefully of what is in the best interests of children. And that is a conversation I think we should have with parents. It's also difficult, I think, when you go, you know, I've got a kid in daycare and there is a huge amount of sharing that is happening as a standard between a variety of people. So carers obviously and parents, but also all the other children that attend that daycare. So some of the ways in which companies really require that data be shared about your child with lots and lots of people does reinforce that culture that sharing of personal information is fine, even when we're not considering what is in the best interests of children. So imposing obligations on companies that deal with children's information to be more careful, to prioritise minimisation, to think about best interests, to give the capacity to delete and have proper control and understanding of what data is held, I think that will also elevate the cultural shift that occurs, I think, as a result of implementing codes like this and better conversations between parents and children moving forward about how their data can be shared, used and ultimately deleted.
Lizzie, Carly, thank you both so much for joining me today. Lizzie O'Shea is the chair of Digital Rights Watch. Carly Kind is the Privacy Commissioner with the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner. She's led the development of this Children's Online Privacy Code, which you can read and give some feedback on. The website is OAIC, Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, .gov.au, OAIC.gov.au. Click on the button, learn more about the Children's Online Privacy Code.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.